Thanks for being here, folks. This is Carol on this beautiful, I can't remember what season we're in. It's 50 degrees. And I'm sorry, there are no showers in sight. But don't push your luck, because they're probably around the corner. Going to be 35 this evening. And of course, there's a chance of showers or rain or something tomorrow and Sunday. Glad you're here. And it is March 2nd. Yesterday was the first day of Women's History Month. Of course, around here we celebrate everybody every day. But it's a special month, and there are a couple of my guests are going to be referring to that. I'm going to start right out with a piece of music from an album I just received. And I'll let you know right now that there is a benefit, it's a celebration, a tribute to Bonnie Raitt, March 18th, and it's happening at the Inn at Harbor Village across the, on the Washington side, and I got this terrific album in the mail filled with songs by some of our favorite women who come and go from Portland and the Northwest and Astoria. So let's start right out with a piece from Lisa Mann. And this is actually the only song, I believe, on the album written by Bonnie Raitt herself. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Oh, yeah. That's Lisa Mann with a song by Bonnie Raitt. And again, there'll be a tribute concert on March 18th. Stay tuned for that. Right now, I have a tribute to my first guest, who has just, I believe, published a gorgeous book. And if you happen to see the Coast Weekend, you have already seen Marianne. Marianne Monson is new in our community, but she hit the ground running. And when did this book come out, Marianne?
It actually came out last fall.
Last fall. Yeah. Okay, that's still pretty recent. Yeah. Well, welcome to Coast Community Radio.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Have you been on KMUA?
I haven't.
We have a KMUN virgin.
That's right.
No longer, however.
And
Marianne is, last night, she and my next guest were featured at the Lovell Room with a wonderful presentation, two separate presentations. But Marianne's going to be at the Astoria Library. I just want to get this out right now so you can put it on your calendar and then you can relax and just listen. Tomorrow from 3 to 4, and I'll let her tell you what she's going to be doing. And then on the 10th, which is next Saturday, she will be at Lucy's. First, she'll be at Riversea Gallery and then at Lucy's Books. And after all, it is Women's History Month, and there's all kinds of things going on to celebrate. So, the unlikely true stories of daring pioneer women, frontier grit. How long did you work on this book?
Oh, a little while. Yeah, between the research and the writing and rewriting.
Yeah. Tell us about this. You have, because last night we were introduced to, I think it was Donaldina Cameron. Mm-hmm. That's for all you Camerons out there. The most loved and feared woman in San Francisco's Chinatown. A fascinating presentation. And before Marianne started, she said, how many of you, and the room was packed. She said, how many of you have heard of her? I don't think anybody.
No.
Not one.
Not a single person.
Yeah. So where did you find these women?
Well, they sort of came to me, honestly. When my editor approached me about writing a book about amazing pioneer women, I was interested, but I had some hesitation. So I really wanted to go beyond the women that you've heard of and that most people have heard of. I wanted to go beyond the regular narratives. And it was also really important to me to expand my definition of the word pioneer beyond its roots in westward expansionism.
Tell us, what does that mean?
Because a lot of times the predominant narrative that we have about pioneers is that they were white women wearing bonnets going west. And that's actually not a very accurate representation of what the American frontier was during that era, which was actually just a collision of cultures and people who traveled many different directions and who were drawn to this place for many reasons, certainly gold being among them.
What years are you talking?
So 1847 is approximately when some of the first earliest overland journeys happened, right around that era. Obviously, anything after Lewis and Clark arrived. And then up till Donaldina Cameron's actually the most recent woman in the book, but she lived almost 100 years. So.
I know. That was astounding.
Yeah.
She lived especially a long time. Considering the life she lived.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to give it away except to say it's rather breathtaking. And it was a completely new side of what was going on in San Francisco's Chinatown and of a woman's life and some of the choices that she made in her life.
Thank you.
Now I do see one who all the hands would have gone up. That would have been Abigail Scott Dunaway, of course.
Yes.
Because we're in Oregon.
Right.
But Did you? Oh, and Mother Jones is in here. Good, yes. Good. She's one of my personal favorites. But I don't recognize, I personally don't recognize any of the others. So what did you have to do to find these women? Or you said they came to you, but from where?
They came to me. And they each had their own way of kind of finding their way into the book. There certainly is some material published on most of the women. The woman who is Native Hawaiian, her name is Makau Pio Pio, mm-hmm. The final chapter in the book. As far as I know, there's never been anything published on her. So
where did you do your research?
Well, actually, I was teaching in Hawaii when I was working on the book, and I kind of put feelers out in the community. That community is very similar to Astoria. It's very small, tight-knit, so all I had to do was kind of put the message out that I was looking for some amazing pioneer women. And I knew that there had been a fairly significant migration from Polynesia to the West Coast of the U.S., and I really wanted to include a woman who had taken part in that particular aspect of the migration.
Very exciting. So that's primary research, too.
Yeah.
So, now, when you said your editor spoke to you about this, have you done other books as well?
I have, yeah. This was my ninth book.
Good. Wait a minute. I missed that. You see, I just picked up my Coast Weekend, so I didn't get a chance to read this two-page article. It's probably written right in there. I'm sorry, but I'm looking at you, and I guess maybe you're 20 years older than you look, but what's your background that you've been writing all these books?
Thank you. Well, I always, from the time someone handed me a pen, my parents, I was actually dictating stories to my parents before I could write them. I have a journal that I dictated to them. So I got an early start, you might say, and I started my first novel when I was 14, and it was set in France where I had never been, but I enjoyed the research.
Where did you grow up, by the way?
All over. I moved all over, but I was born in Boston, and then I went to high school in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And you moved your way across country.
Yeah.
With a few loops, probably. In the
exactly.
Meantime.
Yeah. But I did move a lot. And it was difficult at the time because I always had to be the new person. But it was very good for my career as a writer because I spent lots of time reading and reading and writing.
And did the being in the different communities also spark your interest in writing?
Absolutely.
About it? So what were the other – with the books all – dealing with
no, but that's kind of been my take lately. I've always had a very deep interest in history, but I started off with historical fiction. So I wrote historical fiction novels and some children's books. I was a children's book editor. So right out of my undergrad, I started working at a publishing house because I knew I wanted to be a writer. So I figured that was a good place to be around writers and see how they did what they did. So I worked in publishing there, and they actually published my first children's book.
Nice. Were there illustrations?
There were. There's a great Portland artist, David Hone, who did those illustrations. Yeah.
So that's interesting, though, because a lot of people go from history and then go into historical novels because it allows them, it gives them more. But you kind of brought the discipline in by writing.
Yeah, I never thought of myself as a nonfiction writer, and my editor recognized how much research went into my novels and how much I enjoyed it, and she said, I really don't think it would be that much of a leap for you. So
I
said, well, as long as you let me do what I want with the word pioneer, we have a deal. So.
All right. Wonderful.
That was what happened.
And so did you ever study women's history or no? She's...
So my undergrad is in English literature.
Okay.
So I was trained in the classics. And so my entryway into history was through that.
Okay.
So yeah, it's amazing how much history is involved with the study of literature. I was really focused on the British Romantic poets, but I'm very fascinated with world literature and enjoy reading whenever I travel to
I was just going to ask you, are you still reading?
Oh, gosh. Every minute I can get. Yes.
Okay. Reading and writing at the same time. Do you have anything in the docket right now in terms of writing?
New books? Yes. I'm just finishing up a book about the women of the Civil War. Mm. It's called The Women of the Blue and Gray, Mothers, Medics, Soldiers, and Spies of the Civil War. And that will be out this fall. And the research has been really intensive, but really exciting. And I'm just trying to present these women's stories that are from the North and the South and Native American women and formerly enslaved women without offending any one of those groups, which is really hard.
It's a good thing you can go somewhere and read your books when barbs start coming. But
that's right.
That means you've done your work.
That's right.
It's very exciting. Now, where did you come from and what brought you to Astoria?
So I did my senior year of college at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. Okay. And I thought Portland sounded like a fun place to check out for a year or two. And that was 20 years ago. So, and then in August, I found, but the thing is, like, honestly, Portland was never where I knew I was going to end up. I didn't know where it was. I sort of hoped it would be a place with more sunshine, but that didn't work out. So,
oops. But it's not raining. That must have been your spirit. Yeah.
It's not raining. But I always had one foot in a different century. And when I came to Astoria and I found my house in August and Frontier Grit had done fairly well, and it just seemed like a perfect time, and it was.
Yeah.
So it felt like coming home to move.
Well, here. And it's such an historical area now that you've gotten more into that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if this book and the one that you're writing now sound like books that might be used in schools as well.
Actually, that's one of the most exciting things to me about Frontier Grit is that it is being used in schools.
Great.
It's being used in high schools to supplement history curriculum.
Excellent.
And I'm sure it was even more so for you, but growing up in when you studied history, you just had this idea that there were maybe two women who did something cool, and they were Sacagawea and Susan B. Anthony, and all the rest stayed home, you know? I'm really excited about the idea of girls, women, young women being able to grow up with these stories.
Absolutely.
And to round out their view of what happened.
Thank you. That's fantastic. Now, here, you are presenting, as I said, tomorrow at the Astoria Library on 10th Street in Exchange from 3 to 4. And then next Saturday during Astoria's Art Walk, although I think you're going to start a little early, 4 o'clock at River Sea, is that
right? Yeah, sneak preview.
That's great. And then Fierce is the name of the show with lots of good stuff. And then over at Lucy's Books. But you're also offering some kind of writing. Tell us about what you...
Well, it's still in the works, but I'm working on starting a nonprofit literary guild in the area. So
What would that
look like? I'm really
excited
about that. It's basically to build a community of writers here, as well as use literacy as a tool to build the surrounding community. So to encourage literacy efforts in the schools, collaborations with creative writing, as well as bringing workshops to at-risk populations in the community.
Have you done this before?
Yes, pieces of it. I've taught at the community college for the last 10 years, so that certainly has many of those elements.
So you just closed the book, but I was going to ask you to read something there before I let you go.
Thank you. This is a quote from Abigail Scott Duniway, who, as you mentioned, has a strong Oregon connection. And this is a quote from her autobiography entitled Pathbreaking. And it seems particularly relevant to Women's History Month. So Abigail Scott Duniway said, "The young college women of today, free to study, to speak, to write, to choose their occupation, should remember that every inch of this freedom was bought for them at a great price. It is for them to show their gratitude by helping onward the reforms of their own time, by spreading the light of freedom and of truth still wider. The debt that each generation owes to the past, it must pay to the future."
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Pay it forward, and it sounds like you're doing that in terrific way, and we are very happy to have you here in the area. I'm glad you mentioned that you bought a house. That means you'll stay.
That's right.
So, wonderful.
My plan's to be buried in the Pioneer Cemetery, if they'll let me. So,
but hold on. Let's not rush it. Okay.
Not soon.
Marian Monson and her... What's your website? Do you have a website?
Right now it's mariannemonson.com.
Okay. Yeah.
It will soon be thewritersguild.org, but yes.
Okay. And so check that out, and you can also reach her, mariannemonson@gmail.com.
That's right.
And tell her you're interested, or ask her what the heck she's talking about, or just go see her tomorrow at the library or next week at Lucy's Books. And I have a feeling she's going to pop up all over the place. Check out Coast Weekend. If you don't get the paper copy, check it out online. I hope it has some of the beautiful photographs of my guests. Thanks so much for coming
in. Thank you, Carol. Thanks so much.
Best of luck to you and to our community for having you here.
Thank you.
Okay. And I have another piece of music I'd like to play for you from Ivy Ross Ritchie. This is her newest album, It's Hard to Know, and she is just, I believe, in the process, or perhaps she's got it out now, a video, Girls Sit Screaming. Have a listen right here on Coast Community Radio. This is Carol, your host.
So easy for the boys to make noise, to make noise, while the girls sit screaming in their seats, silently scared to eat. Why should she feel afraid to take up space, to take up space? And why have we created a place where the girls, oh, the girls, must be nice to think the world is yours, to walk right through the open doors and get paid at least what you are worth. Isn't she getting paid?
That's the fabulous Ivy Ross Ritchie with her song, Girls Sit Screaming. And hopefully you'll get a chance to hear her. She's across the river at the Sou'wester, along with so much music and art and healing and wellness. So check her out. And I'll probably play more from that CD over the month, over the year. My guests are not unfamiliar. They are certainly not KMUN virgins.
No!
However, they're here, and this is also not a virginal topic. They're here to talk about the Vagina Monologues, which is being produced again in Astoria at the Clatsop Community College Art Building on the 9th and 10th. That will be next Friday, a week from today, Friday and Saturday. And Mindy Stokes is the key person here. She is the director. She's also the head of the Lives in Transition program now. And she is the person who started the Women's Studies program, which has all kinds of things coming off it. I know you've been here with your students and all sorts of people. The other person whose laugh you might recognize, I'm turning her mic down right now, is Mary Blake, who used to be at the Seaside Parks and Rec, I think they called it.
Yeah.
Mostly we thought of it as a swimming pool, in Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mary is in the play. Is that right?
I am indeed.
Okay. Is this your first time doing
it? Oh, boy.
Oh.
Yes, indeed.
I would say, oh, girl.
I was going to say.
Woman.
Oh, girl. I know.
Oh, girl. Hold on.
Well, no, I won't say congratulate. To you, I say break a leg. Mindy, tell us, there are people who have never heard of Eve Ensler's Vagina Monologues, even though it's been around how long?
20 years.
20 years. Fantastic. And performed all over the country, perhaps.
All over the world.
All over the world. That's what I'm thinking. I've seen it in this town numerous times, and I've seen it in Portland, and I think that's all for me. But have you directed it before?
Yes, this is my fourth time. First of all, thanks for having me, and I love KMUN. Of course, I support KMUN. I will be in your future pledge drive here pretty soon.
Oh, good.
There's a pitch already.
Oh, good. Yes, folks, just in case you missed that.
The 14th.
We have a pledge drive coming up starting actually March 13th.
Oh, 13th.
On the Tuesday the 13th. So get your checkbooks or
your cards
ready. But right now, we're not there yet. So this is the fourth time you're directing it?
Yes, yes. So,
was it you who brought it here then?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So Eve Ensler works. She created the Vagina Monologues based on a series of interviews that she did with mostly women and some girls about their vaginas. Now, why is that important? Because if you can't say the word vagina, you can't talk about what happens to vaginas. And wonderful things happen and bad things happen. So you have to have a language around it. And so she interviewed all these women and developed these monologues based on these interviews. And the monologues are a brilliant piece of art in
Absolutely.
That they make you cry, they make you uncomfortable, they make you laugh, they hurt your heart. They do everything that art is supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you said it's important to be able to hear the word, say the word, one of the ironies of all this is that most babies are born through the vagina. What a concept. And yet the word was like an underground word.
Right.
How could this be?
Right.
This is the first place you've ever emerged into the world, and yet you weren't allowed to say the
right.
words.
So. All right. Stacey Anchin, who is this amazing poet, activist, writer, she also says Jesus passed through a vagina, and you can't say the word vagina? Come on.
Right. I love it. That's great. So, Mary, do you know, is this going to be memorized or with papers, or how are you doing it?
So there are strict guidelines.
Oh,
first of all, Eve Ensler is this amazing, amazing playwright, activist. And she gifts these monologues to people like us around the world every year.
No royalty?
We don't have to pay for them.
Wow.
The money we collect we have to give them to organizations that work to fight violence against women and girls.
Wow.
So I can't make any money off of it. I can make enough money to pay my crew, not the actresses, but mm-hmm. maybe the lighting person or mm-hmm. where we rent the hall. Mm-hmm. This year we'll do it on the campus. And what's amazing is that we're doing it during Au Naturel. So there are paintings of
fantastic.
All these naked bodies around us.
I was going to ask you, are you going to be right in the gallery?
Yes, in the gallery.
Okay, so that's the Royal Nambucca Art Gallery right up there. And yes, the Au Naturel exhibit is ongoing and it's quite fabulous. And whether or not you've seen it, you will see it when you go see Vagina Monologues.
Yeah, that fabulous beautiful. Artist from L.A. will be our backdrop.
Fantastic.
The gal who looks like she's in front of Disneyland. I love it.
Yeah, that's quite a diverse show again. Mm-hmm. So Eve gifts this to the world, basically. Mm-hmm. And she's had quite a life herself, too.
She has. Yeah. She's now in Africa. I don't know if she's in the Congo anymore. She works with women who have been victims or who are survivors of rape camps.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, wow.
Yes. I mean, she's doing the hard work all of the time. And it's just amazing that she gifts these monologues mm-hmm. to us.
And she's a cancer survivor.
She's a cancer survivor. And so the guidelines are pretty strict in that the show is 90 minutes. You can't have an intermission.
Mm-hmm.
And no one can memorize their lines. We read them. We read them.
Okay.
And you shouldn't have more than a couple of rehearsals. And the reason for that, I believe, is so that community theater folks, you don't have to be a community theater person to come and,
right.
and
you don't have to be a professional.
Be a part of this show.
Right. Right.
And that's the beauty of it as well.
Mm-hmm. It actually, this is community theater at its best.
Oh,
so,
good.
Mary, what are you going to be doing?
Well,
and how has it been for you?
Well, first of all, I would like to say what a privilege it is to be sitting in the same room with you and experiencing visiting with our community over the wavelengths. It was
Thank
always
you.
So powerful, and it goes back over three decades. So you're a rock star. So thank you very much. I've never done anything like this. And I had gotten to a point after I had retired that I wanted to kind of reach and do some things that made me feel uncomfortable, but more importantly, made
Good.
Me feel alive.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. My basic character myself is that I'm a pretty happy camper, and so I believe in that, and that happiness really is something that we should all strive for. And so, you know, I kind of live in my bubble and I do my la-la land, and I've been, told that I should get out of my bubble sometime and get into the real world. And so the world really is, there's so much about this. So I respect Mindy so much. She emailed me and said, would you like to be in this TVM? And I'm thinking, well, I don't know what that is, but sure, whatever you want. and then all of a sudden she goes, great, you know, show up and da-da-da, and here's the script. And so all of a sudden on the top it says the Vagina Monologues. I'm going, oh. So
That's
the
great.
Reason why I left my work at the Sunset Empire Park and Recreation District was to be with my mother. So mm-hmm. I'm living with my mother, who is she'll be 100 in April.
Mashallah.
So I
Wonderful.
Kind of tootled out and I looked at my mother and I said, Mother, I'm going to be in the Vagina Monologues. And she sat up, had this startled look, and kind of rolled her eyes. And she said, what? And I said, well, I'm fumbling around for the words. And I said, I have to do this. So I read all from the front to the back, and I couldn't read it all in one sitting because I had to let it really sink in.
Yeah, there's a lot to it.
And I really had to say and do something this year because it's been so such a terrible thing. So I wanted to do something very powerful to help empower women and bring hope and happiness. And that is the nature of my character. It's the woman who loved to make vaginas happy.
Ah, wonderful. So now, Mindy, did you allow your guests to choose pieces that spoke to them?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then the ones that were left over, you assigned.
I didn't have to. What happens wonderful. Is, it's so interesting. I get emails from these women that say, oh, I'm willing to do anything. Oh, yeah. I only want to do this part. Right. And then they get there and they're saying, I want to do that. Right. And I want to do that. Right. And I want to do that. And they're very involved.
Yeah.
So, no, I allow people to – I think it's better if they choose their own monologue. They need to choose what speaks to them. And then I just give them some guidance when they're up there.
Right.
Again, because I've done this for 4 years, mm-hmm. and I know that I would want guidance.
Well,
and it's my job to do it as the director.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's it's important to have a director, mm-hmm. actually. Okay, folks, the Vagina Monologues, TVM for short, not to be confused with TM. F, which is Thursday Morning Folk. This is TVM, the Vagina Monologues, and it's happening Friday and Saturday. What time?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock at the Royal Nebuchadnezzar Art Building. That's right up at the top end of the 16th Street. Go all the way up. There's plenty of parking up behind the buildings there. And come a little early, get a good spot, and be prepared to laugh, to cry, to feel deeply, and maybe to learn a heck of a lot. Thank you so much
Carol,
for bringing it, and thanks for jumping into it, and a happy 100th to your mom
soon.
There
you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have a couple more guests, so we're going to move right along. Oops. And I'll put on some music from the North Coast Chamber Orchestra. Yeah. Now, you may be wondering, folks, what is the North Coast Chamber Orchestra? Because everything around here is North Coast something or other. But the but this is a new name, and I am going to introduce my guests. Glenn and Pam. And they are you both board members? Is that the
That's
idea?
Correct. Okay. That's correct.
Okay, so.
And we're both also musicians that play in the orchestra.
Well, I'm sure they wouldn't let. Listen, we got to keep everybody going.
Yeah,
here,
we have board members who are not musicians.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is if you can get them. You know, it's good to have a variety on the.
We have good ones.
Well, what is the North Coast Chamber Orchestra? Because people have been getting that confused because it never existed before.
Yes. Well, the organization is officially called the North Oregon Coast Symphony, and that's the name that's been around for quite a few years. Mm-hmm. And we have transformed into more of a chamber orchestra with a smaller ensemble. And we had people showing up for concerts expecting to hear a full symphony orchestra and get chamber music instead. So we decided it would be a good idea to have our name reflect that. So officially, it's, for political reasons, we have to keep it North Oregon Coast Symphony. So it's North Oregon Coast Symphony presents the North Coast Chamber Orchestra.
Okay, okay, that's why. Good. Okay, so you are having several concerts and an open rehearsal. Tell us. Tell us, tell our listeners so they can get it down and where they are, what time.
Okay. Tuesday night, March the 6th, is in Cannon Beach at the Community Church, and it's a free open dress rehearsal. It's a little bit different than a real concert because we might stop and start and go back over things. And
that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
If you've never been to a rehearsal, to an orchestral rehearsal,
it's a good way to.
We get a pretty good crowd. We get young families that bring their kids, and it's kind of a cool scene. And that's free. And then on March the 9th, we are playing at the NCRD Performing Arts Center in Nehalem, Oregon. And it's a really great new remodeled space
there. Gorgeous, yeah.
And then on March 11th, we play at the Astoria Elks Club, which is a whole new venue for us. And we will be offering wine and beer at that performance. So,
hey.
Could be fun.
It's going to be fun. How many folks are there these days?
Well, the orchestra, when I count the names in the program, it's around 20.
Mm-hmm.
And we do invite people to come and join us if you play, especially if you happen to play a string instrument, but wind and even percussion. That's what I do. But, it's good to have people. We can do other things that require more than just one player.
So did you did this sort of come about because the North Oregon Coast, I call it Knox, so I can remember North
we
Oregon
do too.
Coast Symphony.
Yeah, we call it Knox too because it's a kind of a long word otherwise.
Yeah, and it also differentiates it from North Coast. It's North Oregon Coast. So was that changing? Is that when you decided to sort of bring it together?
It was just all about numbers. It was just the group just changed. And
how does that affect the music you play?
It does affect the music. It's difficult to find arrangements for the instrumentation that we have, but our conductor, Corey Peterson, it does an excellent job of going through the library that we already have and finding pieces that he can arrange differently. And we pull different instruments in, and he'll rewrite the music for them. So he does a really good job of giving us good music to play.
Yeah. He's amazing.
He is amazing. Not only does he teach music in school, but he also does the Nutcracker and the North Oregon Coast or North Coast Chamber Orchestra and the Columbia Symphony.
Right.
Yes.
So I sort of like, when do you have time to breathe kind of thing.
But I often wonder that about him myself, but he manages to do it.
He's devoted. That's his thing.
Yeah. So what do you play, Pat?
Violin.
And do you play with any of the other groups?
Yes, I play in the Nutcracker.
You also play in the Nutcracker. How about you, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm a percussionist, and I also play in the Nutcracker, and also with the symphonic band in town.
North Coast Symphonic Band.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
And that keeps me, actually, I wound up cutting back a little bit. I had a couple of other things I was doing,
too. It's a good thing you don't have a full-time job.
Yeah.
That's the
advantage. Well, I'm retired. That keeps me even busier.
I know.
Well, there are members of our orchestra that are, I have a full-time job and other members of the orchestra too, but this is what, in some cases, when you have a really stressful job playing in the orchestra, it's like your time, because you get within the music and you lose all the stress, and it's like a special, our rehearsals in Cannon Beach every Tuesday night a lot of the same musicians have been together in this group from the beginning, so over almost 20 years, so it's been, we all just love being there and performing. So,
well, the music and the camaraderie, and that I was going to ask you that. So I'm glad you said why music. Well, and that's exactly what you're saying is it relieves the stress. It also obviously appeals to you. But you've been doing violin since you were how old?
Fourth grade.
Yeah. So you got. Did you start in school?
I did.
Okay,
public
folks.
Schools.
Okay,
you
there you go. Music in the schools. Please look what can happen.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We
save lives.
We invite school musicians to come and join us.
Yeah, because we have a scholarship fund. So.
Yes.
Okay, so let's repeat again. I think it was Tuesday I wrote down that, whoops, that folks could come to your rehearsal at the Cannon Beach Community Church.
Yes.
Is that right? Tuesday the 6th. And then you have concerts on the 9th at NCRD.
Correct.
And on the 11th at the Astoria Elks. Have you ever played at the Elks before?
No.
I have not. I was in there.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, I was in there for something else a year or so ago.
Yeah.
And just an amazing place.
Yeah, it is.
We're excited. We're trying to find new venues. I just want to make sure that we talk about our two soloists.
Go ahead.
Dave Drury and Bona Chai. They're... Dave Drury's guitar, and we're doing jazz pieces. We've never done jazz before.
Oh,
so
good.
It's going to be a whole different thing for us.
That's his specialty.
And Bona is a fantastic flutist.
Yes.
So we're really excited about
that. They're both exceptional musicians.
Yeah. Now, do they play with you usually, or you brought them in?
Bona does.
Okay. Well,
it'd be a first for Dave, but
but
played with him before. He's all over the place.
I was going to say, including the North Coast Symphonic Band.
Yeah.
And you're the Astoria Elks folks, this is like what I say about the Liberty. If you have an excuse to get in these buildings, go. And if the excuse is a fabulous concert, even better. So that's Sunday the 11th, and Friday is at the NCRD in their new Performing Arts Center, which right now is featuring from 5 to 7 tonight is featuring a group of artists at the NCRD Gallery. And they also have theater going on tonight, tomorrow, 7, Sunday at 2, Born Yesterday. So these wonderful buildings that are being used by our community. Thank you so much for coming in, Pam Fleming and Glenn Thomas from the North, today representing the North Coast Chamber Orchestra. The North Oregon Coast Symphony, which is presenting the North Coast. Did I get that right?
Very good. Very good. That's what we're doing.
There you go. Okay. Thanks so much for coming
in.
Thank you.
Okay. And I actually have a live musician coming up next. So I'm going to let my guests leave. And I'll put on in the background a little music by Lauren Kinnon, who is a jazz musician from New York City with family in Cannon Beach. So she will be playing at the Coaster Theater April 15th. And I'll tell you a little bit of what's happening. Voodoo Room, well, you're going to hear that guest right now coming up. Seaside High School tonight, tomorrow, and is featuring Disney's High School Musical. And Klatskanai Middle High School is featuring the Missoula, the Wiz, Missoula Children's Theater with the Wiz of the West, 7:30 tonight and Saturday at 3. I just mentioned the NCRD's Born Yesterday. That's Riverbend Players. Jim Unwin, sculptor and wood carver at the Art Loft. And the Hoffman, 2 to 5, Fridays and Saturdays. Dennis Worrell and Reed Wilson and other artists, they have a reception tomorrow. And then Saturday evening, 7 o'clock, acoustic guitar, Eric Sky and Mark Goldenberg. And The Winecraft is featuring R.J. Marks at 7 o'clock. And Saturday, The Sugar Thistles. And then next Tuesday, one of my favorites, Rick's Poetry, is also at The Winecraft at 7 o'clock. That's an open mic. You can join in. And Saturday, don't forget Marianne Monson at the library at 3. Pony Red, this is a big one. And folks, it's going to benefit the Cannon Beach Academy. Bill Stidell's music, some of it lesser known. Thistle and Rose put this together. Wonderful. The Dubers and Bobcat. And it's four fabulous musicians. Seaside Art Walk is tomorrow night. And Gearhart Art Walk is at 2. And the Peninsula Performing Arts Center has Zach Borden. Astor Street Opry, 2 o'clock. Peter Pan, Saturday and Sunday. I saw it. It's great fun. Kids do a great job. Artport on Saturday night is featuring Long Beach. In Long Beach, is at 1 o'clock, is featuring Louisa Mack. And Here's a big one for you. I'm going to turn the music down because I have a gift for you folks. Now, I didn't tell anybody at the station, so if you call and someone answers, you'll have to explain. I have tickets for you if you can go to, on Saturday night, at the Old Nehalem Fire Hall. This is the Fire Mountain School big fundraiser, their raffle fundraiser. I got some of their tickets, and if I win, I'm going on the trip. However, I also get tickets for Havana Nights. It's a delightful night with good food, a fabulous auction, great music, and I am willing to give those tickets to you. Now, it's not pledge drive yet, but don't forget this next, in a couple of weeks, when it is pledge drive. So call the station, 503-325-0010. And whomever you speak to, give them your name and your phone number. And after the show, I will call you back and we'll figure out how to get you tickets for Havana Night, Saturday night, free to you. And that's at the Old Nehalem Fire Hall. Okay. My guest is here, and I think, let's see, he's got a couple of mics lined up, and I'm going to just turn him. Let's see, I'm going to turn on all the mics because I don't know what he's got.
Yeah.
There you go. You got. Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Meow.
And who would you be?
I be Rushatakis.
Rushatakis. Okay, for all you programmers who struggled so hard to know how to pronounce that name, it's actually quite phonetic. Rushatakis is performing tonight at the Voodoo Room. What time are you going to? Probably 9-ish, 8:30, 9-ish.
It says 9:30.
Yeah. Okay, 9:30, because before that, the movie is on.
Oh.
The Voodoo Room is on the corner of 11th and Marine Drive, and you need to see this guy. Whatever you think about the music, he actually is a professional cellist. I'm going to give it away. But he also is an outrageous goblin. So you want to play us something and then tell us a little bit? We only have 6 minutes.
We've got plenty of time. Okay. I like to live in the micro world. I consider myself a mini composer, and my level of fame is on the miniature level.
What does that mean?
It means just enough to deal with, but not too much to make my life uncomfortable, you know? Just enough to keep me doing what I'm doing and be minorly celebrated. You know, I get recognized in airports every once in a while.
I like it.
You know,
it.
A few times a year.
I like
so
your attitude.
Micro fame for a micro composer. Not trying too hard to do anything huge, but just very fluffy. Like this song, Krooby Booby, which is in my own language, which is called the language of Sneth, you will see. And it involves a rapping section where I will play one thing on the cello and it'll keep going my hands even though I'm saying something totally different over it. You'll see. I say, Krooby Booby. Margie Pargy, Fundal Exhibit, Urga Sturga, Crackta Verga, Andravalga, Barkta Stuba, Vixquid, Smoggle Blago, Barksonato, Havel Lampus, and Gramixamir, Algothorbis, Svensonormus, Pinky Stinky, Wicky Dicky Date. Here's the loop. Go Quaidal up a Stapoosh, nobody on a Gippy Sway, the Fifty Campatros, Go Napple on a Cavias to Rapple in a Twicky Bark of Ganistro Date. Harmola me lork forks, doctor Nipipity paper in a bush, waiting for a push back to the front of the sugar hunt. No one found a muffin yet. Krooby booby, Enothobe, Margie Pargy, Wendell Exhibit, Urga Sturga, Cracked of Urga, Andravalgo, Barco, Stubavix, Squid, Smoggle, Plago, Barksonato, Havilampus, and Grimixamir, Agothorbus, Spencenormus, Pinky Stinky, Wicky Dicky Dane. Here comes verse 2.
Oh, very naughty.
Rumble up at your quackna dice. If you're hungry, chew a piece of ice straw. It's a nice straw that gets defined by the milky muscles of imagination. While on vacation, I saw a dusky duck dance rivetingly into the void. Far from annoyed, I was inspired. It lit a fluffy fire in my mind. Krooby booby, Inothobe, Margie Pargy, Wendell Exhibit, Urga Sturga, Crackta Furga, Andravalga, Barka, Stuba, Vixquay, Smoggle, Blago, Barksonato, Havilampus, and Gramixamir, Algothorbus, Svensonormus, Pinky Stinky, Wicky Dicky Day. Wiki did, Wiki did.
I love it. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I have to tell you folks that extra added instrument that he, a kazoo. However, it is very firmly attached to the top of the cello.
With rubber bands.
Very firmly. I'm not so sure.
No, it's very secure. I use a double rubber banding technique, and they've never fallen off. It's been a fun process. I started rubber banding these on in about 2015.
Is that also a flute-type thing?
This is a wood kazoo. So this the first one that I was playing on that song is a metal kazoo that I actually bought in Rome.
Wow.
So it's an Italian kazoo. Oh. You know how they are about Italian cellos and all that. Well, this is an Italian kazoo with this. And then the wood kazoo sounds more like this.
Fabulous. It's fabulous. And the whole scene is quite amazing. What a joy. Now, do you play anywhere, any kind of, normal music? I have a feeling that you would classically trained somewhere.
Oh, yes. In the very old days, I was raised, I started playing violin when I was three. Should I say I was made to take violin lessons when I was three?
Right.
And all the way up until I was 12 and I discovered the guitar. Then I didn't touch the cello or any classical music for a few years. And that's how I really got into it, because then I found my own way into it, making up my own rules and doing my own thing. And I went back to classical music a few times, and I got into other styles that are less rigid, like bluegrass. I spent a long time playing bluegrass and folk music and Celtic music with some people that are quite experts in that.
On guitar mostly?
No, this is all on the cello.
On cello?
Yeah.
Oh, great. The cello has been featured so much in the past few weeks. I had,
It's really an exploding time for cello.
Anna Fritz was here from Portland Cello Project.
Oh, yeah.
All kinds of folks have been playing cello. It's one of my favorite instruments. It's got such a gorgeous tone.
It has a gorgeous tone and also a bunch of unexplored possibilities.
Well, just heard that, and I love what you're doing. Your bow is moving so fast, however, I tried to take a picture and it's just like...
Blurry.
Yeah.
Well, I use a bouncing technique where I get the bow to skip like a rock would on water, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
With one stroke, you can get two notes.
Yeah.
And then if you get that, you can combine that with the up, so you get double. Now, if you can see my hand, it's only moving like this. My hand's moving at that speed, but the bow moves faster. Or you can do triplets.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of
gorgeous.
Fun.
Okay, folks, we are out of time. Ruchitikus is going to be at the Voodoo Room on 11th and Marine Drive tonight, this very night. And you can catch his act and enjoy his humor, his looks, and certainly his music. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. KMUN Astoria 91.9, KTCB Tillamook 89.5, coastradio.org. To you, thanks so much for being here, folks. Moving right along.